Please take your seats. If you aren't already resting your legs, I'll try and give you a good 2 hour break again this morning if I can. We're a little bit ahead of time. We've got a good hour and a half before we need to end, so someone wants to put the kettle on. Shabbat Matot Masai is our portion this week. We're at the end of Bamidbar, Numbers. We're about to enter the last book of the Chumash, and that means, what is on the horizon? Rosh Hashanah and the High Holy Days are almost upon us. Yes, I hate to say it again, but that means another year has gone round, and it just feels like, was it really? Really? Another year? But it all effectively is, once we're into the book of Deuteronomy, we know, of course, that it goes on very, very quickly. It's Matos, Masai, not the one that you've got up on the screen. It's not Mishpatim. It's definitely not Shemot, so I'm not quite sure what's wrong with that slide, but it's not the right one. The readings this morning, they came from Numbers 31, 1 to 11. From the Haftarah, it was the prophet Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah 2, 1 to 13. From the Masonic writings, it came from the Besorah, the good news of Matichel, of Matthew. And that was chapter 5, 33 through to 37. All about vows, as you'll have picked up by now if you've read through the portion this week, and obviously Yeshua's own views and understandings about the vows there, as we were hearing almost at the end of the book of Bamidbar. So every time we get to the end of something in this way, with final things, you know, it's really important that we pay attention to what are the last words or thoughts contained in the sections that we go through. It's like, you know, when someone is at the end of their life, you really do pay attention to every word that they are saying. Doesn't matter what they say, but they're giving you, you know, the clues, the keys to understanding things, or last words of wisdom or whatever. And we see this really in the book of Bamidbar in Numbers here. It's interesting because right at the end of this book here, we start to read about the vows and the words that we speak. It's like this is almost the pinnacle of this, because by the time we get into Deuteronomy next week, of course, we're beginning the running through the Torah again. In many ways, there's nothing new in Deuteronomy. It's just repeated, it's rehashed. We're bringing out a deeper level of understanding about what the Torah and the commandments are all about. So really, in many ways, the book of Numbers here, Bamidbar, brings to a conclusion the kind of original material that we're hearing from the Lord. And he focuses upon words, vows, things that we say with our mouths. And an important part of all of this is that everything that we say, every word that we speak, should be carried out faithfully. If we say we're going to do something, then you should do it. If you have no intention of doing it, then don't say it. Don't promise it to someone because you just want to get them off your back, because you want to move on and get on with the rest of your day or whatever. If you're not going to do it, if you have no intention of doing X, Y, or Z, then do not say it. Do not speak it. Yeshua was critiquing the fashion about the vows in the first century. It's not that he was negating taking a vow in that sense, but it was getting quite fashionable to take a vow. Well, I'll take a vow on the Aron, and someone else comes up and says, ha, on the Aron, I'll take it on the Torah scroll then. And someone else comes up, you take it on the Torah scroll, I'll take it on the Bimah then. Or whatever. You know, it's like a kind of an auction house going on. It's not about the highest thing that you can think about to take a vow on. It's not about that. It's not about pretending to be righteous or holy because the thing you're taking a vow on is the next stage up from your neighbour who's only taking a vow on the gold, on the altar, or whatever it is. But words. He says that your yes be yes, your no be no. Just speak it in honesty and in truth and mean it. Stick to it and do it. We really need more of this. Boy, we certainly need it in our politics in the world right now. You know, words become so cheap in our world. just used to manipulate and twist people's minds and get them to do what they want to do. And it's just we've lost the understanding of the power of what words, righteous words, are truly all about. We should mean what we say. And if we take a vow, which is even more serious in this context, then we absolutely must carry it out. I would suggest to you, in all honesty, that you do not take vows, not unless you are absolutely deadly serious before the Lord in any way, shape or form. Because the moment you have vowed this word, whatever this or action or you say you're going to do, if you take a vow to the Lord in that way, you had better carry it out. It's deadly serious if you don't. It's deadly serious for a reason. Because it's by God's word that everything came into being. When God speaks, it happens. And when God speaks, it's not, you know, and to separate the light from the darkness, and the word came, and this, it's not, and the Lord spoke the word, and there was a pause while creation thought, yeah, shall we do that then? Yeah, I don't know. Sun? Who needs the sun, right? I mean, I don't know, I'm not in the mood. When God speaks, it happens. There was no doubt about it. When God speaks a word, his logos, if you want, that living word that we read about at the beginning of the Besora of John, God's, it says God speaks and the word comes in, Yeshua comes into history, his redemption comes alive, he's made flesh before us, he speaks and it happens. There was never any doubt about the end of Yeshua's life in that way. Nothing was going to stop the plan of God in Messiah. He had spoken and it would be. When God gives us a word of promise in the scriptures, he says, I will never forsake you. I will never leave you. Absolutely rock solid guarantee that is true. And the enemy may whisper in your mind and say, yeah, but this is true. And I don't know. And look at that situation. And what about that over there? The enemy is a liar. God is true. Always. Always. And what he promises, he says, and he does. And so, therefore, we have to be careful. Because if we, as his representatives, his ambassadors in this way, if we then go on to start talking about things casually, and we don't carry them out, or we don't do X or Y or whatever, we run the danger of undermining the one whose word is always true. It's one of the reasons why false prophets were stoned. And we might just say, look, that's a bit extreme, isn't it? Really? Really? Stoning a false prophet? No. Because that false prophet was standing there and saying, thus says the Lord. And the Lord did not say. That prophet had to be removed because of the danger that that person could cause in Israel. It is a serious, deadly thing. And I want to include in this today the casualness, whatever the word is, someone will correct me, you know, whatever that word is, the casual nature that people now so often stand up and say, thus says the Lord. Honestly, if you are not absolutely rock solid certain that what you're about to say is from God, then shut up, because it is serious. And many people's faith gets knocked because someone will stand there and proclaim something and declare it to be of the Lord when it seriously is not of the Lord. And they begin to respond to it. When someone says, thus says the Lord, they take it on board. They begin to adjust their life in line with the message and the words which have just been brought. If it is wrong, you are harming and damaging people's lives spiritually. It is deadly serious. And I suspect that that little phrase, thus says the Lord, is overused in this day. If you think about it in the scriptural sense, the number of prophets we had, you can count on two hands throughout almost all of Israel's history. It's not that many, actually, who had the power and authority to truly speak in the Lord's name in that way. We should be very careful when we do this. And yet, I want to put it to you. As always in these things, you know what my mind is like. I overthink everything. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, when I'm churning away in my office during the week and thinking, okay, so far so good, but what about? What is this? What are we talking about in all of this? God speaks, it happens. What is going on, the dynamic behind it all? False prophets. And it just struck me as I was considering about the false prophets and the ones who were stoned and so on. You know, you'd have to be a pretty wicked person to knowingly stand up before a congregation to prophesy or speak on behalf of the Lord, knowing that what you were saying was wrong and even deliberately harmful. You'd have to be a pretty wicked person, right? Now, I've already said to you, we need to be cautious about standing up and saying, "Thus saith the Lord." But if you stood up and actually said those words and you knew the words you were about to bring were deliberately wrong to cause harm, you would be a pretty wicked person, right? I think you'd agree. I'm thinking about Balaam. You know, from last week, the portions that we've been having here in the last couple of weeks or so, in many ways, even he couldn't do it. He wanted to get up and curse Israel, didn't he? He wanted to get up and speak these prophetic words of harm against our people. Even he couldn't do it. And he was involved in some seriously dodgy stuff. Even he, at the end of the day, wasn't able. There was truth coming out of the donkey's mouth, first and foremost, and then even Balaam had to join in the party with what the donkey was saying, effectively, because even he wasn't able to do it. And honestly, it kind of got me thinking about this. False prophets, people who get up and cause harm by what they're saying. I'm not sure that most false prophets actually get up and deliberately prophesy wrong and harm. I'm not even sure that most casual prophets do that in that sense. What I'm trying to get to here is, what am I saying? I think most people, when they get up and say, "Thus saith the Lord," even some of the false prophets who were and did indeed go on to be stoned in many cases in the scriptures, I don't think they got up in the morning necessarily and just thought, tell you what, let's go and falsely prophesy to Israel today. You know, it's been a couple of days, right? I don't think it's the kind of thing that you wake up and think you're going to do. It'd be really strange to do this. So it kind of got me thinking about the nature of all of this. And I put it to you what I think. I honestly think in the depth of all of this, that most people, when they get up and bring a word from the Lord or a prophet in the Tanakh, or whoever it may be, a false prophet, or even one of the good prophets, most people, when they get on their feet in this way to bring a word, do not knowingly bring harm or something deliberately wrong to the people. They honestly believe they are doing some good. They believe they're doing good. No one believes what they're doing is harmful. And I've been thinking around this for a while about, you know, when you see people in congregations, sometimes even people who need to be disciplined, but people who come and go and do whatever they do, no one actually at the base of all of that, there's no one that I've ever spoken to who sat in my office and said, "Yeah, you're right, I'm here to deliberately harm the congregation, adios, bye-bye." I've never experienced that. Honestly, I never have. What I have always experienced is people in themselves at least have honestly believed that they were doing good, but ended up doing harm. And it's quite an interesting situation when you consider it in this way. You know, the false prophets of Israel, the ones who are prophesying peace, peace, when there is no peace, you know? The ones in the middle of conflict and warfare and battle, and they were standing up, "It's okay, chill. Take a chill pill, it's going to be alright. We're going to be okay." And it was not going to be okay. And you think, well, what on earth were they doing standing up? You know, they genuinely were believing what they were saying, what was going through their heads, even in the face of almost certain defeat. And I'm wondering, you know, were these the people who were like saying, "This is really, really bad, but maybe if we can at least be encouraging, we'll help to lift the mood? Maybe it'll help people? Maybe it'll support them in this moment of need and crisis. We'll do X and Y, I'll say X and Y." Even though in their minds they're thinking, "I'm not sure if God is saying this, but you know what, right now it's going to be supportive and helpful and kind and good and nice." But it wasn't of God. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? People try to bring good into situations. They don't mean harm. People act in ways in which they genuinely think are good things to do or good things to say. And they wade into situations, not just as false prophets, it's not even on a level of a headline like being a false prophet, it's how we as people often behave, what we do in our own private spiritual lives, how we function as a community, a congregation, how we deal with people around us. You know, sometimes we just think, oh, I need to do good here, I need to be kind, I need to be this, I need to be that, I need to be the other, because we get this response which goes on, and yet it may not be the right path. And some of these people in the past wanted to reform their corrupt societies as they saw it, but you know, their calling wasn't of the Lord. And these false prophets ended up speaking hollow, harmful words, which may have felt good to them, thinking they were helping in a situation, but effectively they were delivered ultimately with evil intent behind. Even if they didn't mean evil, evil was intended through. Let me give you an example. Scriptures are full of grey areas, as you know, and I like exploring those grey areas because we learn so much through all of them. Let me give you an example of Yiftach. Judges 11. What a wonderful man he was, you know. He's facing the Ammonites there, he wants to go out to war, and what does he do? A lovely spiritual man of God. And he takes a vow, doesn't he? Yeah? Careful what you say. And he says, you know what? Whatever walks out of my door, I will offer to you. When the victory party begins and we beat the Ammonites, he says, I will take a vow because it's what the Torah says I should do, and I will stick to it because that is going to be something good, and it will show the Lord that I'm serious. And I mean absolutely 100%, Yiftach was spot on. He was down the line. There was nothing wrong with his motive or intent in any way, shape or form. Now we can talk about, you spoke in haste, of course, and we can say maybe you should have thought a little bit more careful about what you were about to say. But there was no evil intent in his heart. There was none. He didn't mean it for harm. He didn't think that his daughter was going to walk out of that door. And the words were out there. They were hanging in the air. The vow was taken. His desire was to serve God in a spiritual, well-grounded, tore away. He knew the scriptures, he knew how to behave, he knew what to do, and yet, the result of him doing this good in that sense ended up being a disaster for his daughter. I'm sure he was devastated as anyone else would have been in that scenario. And he must have stood there and said, Lord, I only meant this for good. And yet a person's life has been destroyed. How meaning well actually can go on to cause harm. Because Yiftach genuinely meant well. It's the grey area, it's the grey zone. I want to flip it on its head right now as well. Because there's another parallel to this on the flip side of the coin. We were just talking about it a little bit last week or the week before with Pinchas. What an interesting figure he is. And it's picking up a little bit from what Lenka was saying in the last two Shabbats in her sermons there. What an amazing figure Pinchas is. Acting completely outside of the boundaries of Torah in so many ways. You know, picking up a spear. I think the couple that were fornicating well and truly got the point. Right? They got it. There was no way that act was commanded in the Torah. Not a chance. Judge, jury, everything. Rolled into one. Poof, he just acted. His zeal got the best of him. And he acted at that point. And he just got on with it. And yet, he was rewarded by God for what he did. That blows my brains out. Now for most people we go, whoa, you went way against the Torah. Sorry mate, you ain't getting any comments. Not for you. And yet he was rewarded. For his zeal he was rewarded on all of this, even though he overstepped the mark in so many ways. Well, there are grey areas in the Torah. If you want them, they are there. You flip things around, you begin to see it again and again. One of the most dramatic, most perplexing of parables that Yeshua told I was going to do this for the Masonic writings reading this morning, but so I thought we'd go for the one in Matichal there on vowels. But just read you a little bit about this. This is the, well, in my scriptures, the heading is the parable of the unjust steward. The heading is interesting because actually, for most believers, they haven't got the faintest idea what to do with this parable, because it's a really strange parable. And the really strange parable is because this man, this unjust steward, gets on and does something really weird. So I'll just pick out a little bit of the parable. You know, it's from Luke 16. And basically, this steward has been put in charge of the farm by the owner of the farm. And what he's doing is he's doing some sharp practice. You know what he's doing. He's going to the farm, the owner's debtors and suppliers, and he's saying, okay, you can sell it for that. I'll stick 20% on it for me, and we'll do a little cut here and a cut there, and it's all, you know, it'll work. And the owner's like, okay, this is good. My farm is working. He's all happy, right? Until it all goes badly wrong. And suddenly the debtors come knocking on the door, and what the unjust steward does, you know, it's interesting. What his response in all of this, because his master's about to shame him and say, you know what, I'm sticking you in the headlines on the Sun newspaper tomorrow morning. That's effectively what the owner says. You are going to be out there. You're going to be shamed. You're going to go on Instagram or whatever. I'm going to put you out there. And everyone's going to know what you're doing. So anyway, the unjust steward, you know the story, he gets on with it. He goes back to all of the debtors and he goes, you know what, let's just, you know what, I'm going, this is awkward. Let's just deal. And he does. And then we get to the situation in the parable. I'm going to pick up here. Where he says, you know, you owe 100. Let's just get rid of that invoice. Put 80 on a new one. We'll deal with it. We'll make sure it all works. And then it goes on. The master commended this unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon. What? Did I just read that correctly? Make friends for yourself with unrighteous mammon? Money? That when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. This is a couple of verses, by the way, which for most believers, when you go through commentaries and they're going, well, we don't really understand this, you can't commend something which is dodgy, that's not right, you must be misunderstood, and it goes round and round and round and round. I want to just explain a little bit about the parable here, because it's really important. When we're looking at these grey zones of understanding how things function, there's an anti-Essenic context that we're looking at here straight away. We can hear it, the sons of light, the sons of darkness. It's Essenic in nature. What did the Essenes do? They would take all of your money, put it in a central pot, and it would all be run from a central base in that way. Disempowering people to support the weak and the vulnerable. There's a whole load of stuff going on in this parable. But that aside, the terminology scripturally is challenging. This morning, if you think about the blanket command elsewhere, Yeshua says in the same global context, he says, be as wise as serpents and harmless or innocent as doves. Since when is Yeshua saying to us to be as wise as a serpent? The serpent! Huh? It's crazy, isn't it? Or is there something else going on here? Grey areas. You know, anything serpentine in Jewish thinking is not really going to be respected as a model for anything, frankly. But we're missing something in all of this. Talked about meaning well, causing harm, and now we've got apparently being commanded or exhorted to do something which is a little bit dodgy in order to bring, what? You know, the whole thing just is a crazy, crazy sort of situation. We've got to dig a little bit closer in all of this. Maybe it's slightly less than black and white than what I'm painting here. The serpent. You may not understand this, but the same word is used there back in Bereshit 3:1 of the serpents. Often translated, certainly in mine, but in other translations, it's just translated for the serpent was crafty or cunning. And yeah, you've got those translations. You know what the Hebrew also says? It says the serpent was shrewd. Same word as we're using here of the unjust steward, interestingly enough. And you can look at that and go, well, you see, he's as evil as this serpent in the garden, and that would be too quick, too easy, guys. We're not going to go there. That's too obvious. What I am looking at in all of this, though, is that the word shrewd in itself, actually even crafty or cunning, is not necessarily something which is evil. wickedness is evil. But if you're a little bit crafty with the situation, shrewd in dealing with the situation, that's not necessarily in itself evil. In fact, if you think back to what the enemy was doing in the garden there, it's how the enemy actually entrapped us and ensnared us in the garden. He was playing on our vulnerabilities and natural human weaknesses, playing on this game. He was being very shrewd in many ways to try and get what he wanted. It's the same terminology. How does it affect us as people when people come at us in this way, who are being very shrewd or cunning or crafty or whatever? How do we get caught up in the games which the enemy gets playing with us? You know, if you're being someone who is really good, really nice, being kind, helpful, supportive, loving, which we all are, and the enemy sees this, he saw it with Adam and Chava, their naivety, their innocence, and he played them. And it's about how we get played in all of this, just like Yiftach, just like the other examples that we've got about here. When we say we'll do something or want to do something good, connect ourselves to something that ends up becoming a problem for us. Excuse me. Tickly throat. Think about it in the same scenario. As Yeshua talks about it here, he says about, I'm sending you out as lambs to the wolves. Sorry. Tonsil tickling. I could scratch it if I would, but you wouldn't enjoy the experience. Yeshua says, you know, I'm sending you out as lambs to the wolves. It's an interesting one, isn't it? And when he says, you know, I'm sending you out as lambs to the wolves in this world, therefore be wise as serpents and harmless and innocent and doves. Keep your innocence, but don't be naive. Don't allow your goodness to be taken advantage of. Don't be sucked into something which on the face of it looks like you're doing good, but actually ends up doing harm. Because we're naive and gullible and innocent. It's not just about being innocent and harmless. Sometimes we can get drawn into something which on the face of it is good. It's something that we can see that we're doing some good and we're not wanting to cause harm. But actually when we get sucked into something, we end up thinking that we're going to do good, but the result is that we end up doing harm. It's about naivety in a hostile world. Sending you out as lambs to the wolves. And Yeshua was well aware of this. And the parable, when we're talking about it on the flip side, the parable of this, in so many ways, is saying that, you know, it's not that we have to be out there to deceive people. That's not what it's about. It's being shrewd or cunning or crafty in a situation that we find ourselves in. It's not about deceiving people. It's not about misleading people. It's not about trying to sort of be harmful in that way or evil. It's about looking at the situations that we find ourselves in and not being naive. It's about understanding. To put it in a nutshell, it's about discernment, of course. I mean, one of the strongest, most powerful spiritual gifts that we should have. When we're in a situation, we should first and foremost discern what is going on. Someone may be playing you. Someone may be using you. Someone's sucking you in for their own purposes, relying on your good nature, your kindness and your lovingness and your supportiveness and everything else. And suddenly, wham, you find yourself in a situation where you're out of your depth and you think, how did I get here? This is causing harm. This isn't doing anyone any good. People around you, this world, will try to trap you. People around you, even your friends, maybe even other believers. Yes, even other believers. Playing on your decency, your kindness, your goodness, your willingness to listen and help and support and be there and on. All these qualities are good, but not everyone out there is good. We have to wise as serpents and yet as innocent as doves. Don't lose your innocence, but don't be gullible, don't be naive. To think that everyone, maybe even other believers, are good and nice and kind. Some people do have agendas. Seriously, they do. And discerning that is vital if we're going to keep our own spiritual health. Navigating this grey area. You know, you let your yes be yes and your no be no. Understand what is happening. Let words be true. Don't get sucked into things by mealy words and mealy mouth words which seem nice and lovely on the surface, but actually you're not getting sucked into something which you shouldn't do. I think it's quite interesting when we see how Yeshua navigated all of this in his own life. You know, he was as wise as a serpent in his own way as he was teaching. You know, again and again, what is it we read from the scriptures here when people would come up to, groups of people, would they come up and say, well, Rabbi, what about that then? You know, and the scriptures often give us a bit of a preamble, don't they? And he says, and Yeshua, seeing that they were setting a trap for him, or discerning what their heart intention, you know, we often get that little preamble in the scriptures in those situations. Now, if you were a naive person spiritually, you'd be thinking, oh, they want to know. Oh, let me go and help them. Let me go and teach them. And I'm going to give you an example of this from years and years back. I think I've maybe mentioned this before, but it was something I really didn't understand at the beginning, but it really made sense later on. And it was a rabbi from the States, and he was here at a conference at the time. And I was on the check-in desk for the conference, and he was standing there with us and talking to people and so on. And there are people would be coming up and they'd be saying, well, Rabbi, this or that. And he'd be going, not now, thank you, go away. And I remember sitting there thinking, how rude. And then another person would come up and he would sit down and spend 20 minutes with them. And I'd be thinking, what's going on? You were rude to that person. You literally booted them into touch. And this one, you sit down and have a cup of tea with them. And the next one would come along and he'd be like, you know what, go speak to so-and-so about that. I'm really not, you know. I'd be thinking, this is nuts, you know. I mean, my initial judgment, really, that situation was that he was a really rude man and certainly not someone that I wanted to be copying in any way, shape or form. And I actually approached him afterwards, because I do this kind of thing. And I said, why? I said, you're so rude. Why did you do this? And he just said, I said, honestly, discernment. He said, the person I sat down with, God was calling. Those three, God isn't calling them. They're wasting my time. They weren't listening anyway. They just wanted to take time. He says, I'm here at a conference. We've got 2 days at a conference. I've got to focus on the ones who genuinely want to follow God and not the ones who don't. So that made me sit up. He discerned. And you can say, oh, but you're a nice guy. Just sit and talk to them. Yeah, you could have done. But it wouldn't have been a good use of the skills and calling that he had as a rabbi in that situation. He was discerning, just as Yeshua was discerning. You know, sometimes I remember, again, no names or anything else, but I can remember in some of the prayer queues that we had in conferences, and we were praying for people. There was, you know, queues would form and we'd be there and we'd be praying for people. And I learned through that experience that not everyone who comes up for prayer wants prayer. Now that may shock you, but it's true. And I remember standing there thinking, so, you know, how can we pray for you? And 5 minutes in, 10 minutes in, they're preaching at me about whatever thing they want me to learn. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, you came up here for prayer. What's going on? And I learned. And when someone would then start with that, I'd be thinking, thank you, go sit down. Go away. Not interested. Next, prayer. Now you could say that's really rude. But people will abuse your kindness and your goodness and your willingness to... Yeah, they will. And these are believers. And I'm not saying that they were intending harm. I'm going to go back to what I was saying before. These are not people who get up in the morning and think, you know what, I'm going to waste that rabbi's time in the prayer queue this evening. They weren't thinking that. They genuinely were thinking they were there to do good and it was wonderful what they were doing. I'm not knocking it on that level. But not everything is on a straight and narrow. I think it comes back to the parable. It comes back to Yeshua's wise as serpents, innocent as doves. Discern situations. Discern what is going on. Doing good. sometimes it takes you to a position where harm actually comes out on the other side, or can do, if we're not being sensible about it. Being wise, being shrewd, crafty, cunning, whatever way you want to translate that word, suddenly begins to understand something. It's not about being dishonest, but nor on the flip side of that coin does innocence equal gullibility. You know, we're not called to be gullible. We're not. You know, sometimes we find ourselves in situations where we think, I'm doing this because I'm doing good. And we genuinely think we are. But actually we're doing harm. It's a challenge. You know, I like going deeper with text and deeper with the scriptures. It's a real challenge for us. Not everyone who comes and sits on my sofa upstairs wants to be helped. Sometimes after 6 or 7 hours of counselling or whatever, you're no further on from the point they walk through the door. And you're sitting there thinking, why am I even doing this? It's really interesting that, you know, we got little bits of mentions in the scriptures about, you know, when the angel comes down and stirs up the waters and the cripples are all laying around the edge. And there's one guy there who's laying around the edge, and he's been there for I don't know how many years. Read the scriptures, you'll see how many years he's been sitting there. You know what? Everyone else around that pool, in the meantime, they've all got up and got in. He hasn't. And he's no further away from the edge of the pool than any of the rest of them. I don't doubt that he was any less crippled than the rest of them. Why is he still there? Why were his friends not waiting there with his arms and legs like this, waiting for the angel to stir the waters when he's in? That's what I would have been doing. I've been saying to my mates, get ready, I'm that crippled, I can't move. Hold me over the water so no one gets in there before me, because I want to be healed. Was it that he didn't want to be healed because he was earning too much as a beggar? Who knows? Yeah, I'm not passing judgment here in a sense, but you know what? Sometimes not everything is as obvious as it seems when you scratch the surface. Not being gullible, not being naive when we deal with situations, when we think we're going to do good. We think by doing something we're doing good, but actually all we're doing is reinforcing something for that person, which is therefore not getting them free. Some people genuinely do like the attention. They do. It may sound counterintuitive to actually cut off spiritual support for someone because you think you're doing harm, and yet actually by stopping doing good, sometimes that person can wake up and take personal responsibility for themselves and actually begin to grow and move forward in the Lord. Wow. Did I just drop that bombshell? But it's true. It may sound counterintuitive. Sit square in that grey zone at times. And we just think, no, Lord, I just want to do good. I want to do good. I want to do good. I want to be there for people. You know what? If you are doing good and being there for people 24/7, you'll be exhausted by this time next week. You cannot heal the world. You can't even heal a person. None of us can. Only God can. And yet because we're good people, we're kind people. We love others. We want to be there for others. So we pour ourselves out more and more and more. And eventually we come across people who are just saying, well, yes, please, I'll have some of that. No intention of changing. No intention of repenting. No intention of doing anything at all. And it will suck everything out of you. Every last little living drop. And there will be no fruit to show of it. We need to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Not being naive and gullible. You know, the unjust steward, to go back to here in the parable, he was praised by his master. Not because he was a wheelie-dealy whatever, but you know, he looked at a situation and he kind of thought, you know what, that's going to be the best way that we get through this. And he was praised for this. Not that he was praised for his underhand dealings, but he was praised in the sense of he was living in a challenging environment and he was working out what the best way forward would be. It's a good way of understanding it in that way. Sometimes doing good can cause more harm. You know, it's like, I don't know, I've never been really actively involved in people who have taken drugs and so on, and people will say that methadone and whatever is not helpful or good or bad, I don't know, I'm not even going to get into that argument, but you know, there's a line of thinking, isn't there, that if we just somehow keep people going on it, but maybe reduce it, or, you know, sometimes it's a hard call. We can think that we're doing good for people, but actually we're just keeping them trapped in cycles of harm. I don't know. We can do this with people in ministry. We make excuses for people. Oh, they're only doing that because of X, Y, and Z. Well, maybe that needs to be challenged then. You know? Rather than somehow explaining it or letting people off the hook. I don't know. We need to be less gullible, less naive in situations. Discern situations that we're on. Wisdom, being shrewd. Listening to the Lord in each and every situation that we find ourselves in. Sometimes doing good can cause harm. And knowing when to stop, really, really critical. Taking a vow, not carrying it through, ending up causing harm, problems. Rash thinking, not thinking about what we're doing and what we're saying. Intentions good, intentions pure, and yet causing harm. And I think for most of us, it's kind of where we sit, isn't it? No one, as I said at the beginning there, no one wakes up in the morning and thinks, today I want to be a false prophet. I don't think that's true. You'd have to be really evil. And there are probably one or two. But most people aren't in that category. They don't get up and think, oh, let's cause harm today. Most people get up and think, I want to do good today. And yet sometimes in situations where we find ourselves that we think we're doing good, and yet we go on to cause harm. Because it's not the right path. Recognizing under the hood of the goodness of our lives lurks traps. It's a painful lesson to learn spiritually, but we truly must. You know, we have to learn how and when to do good. And the way that we're meant to do good. Not just as a kind of a blanket, oh, I think this is nice, I think I can help you. I mean, again, using so many examples, but examples from a congregational setting. You know, when you find people in a congregation who will look at someone in a need or spiritual need or whatever, and they'll just be rushing in to minister or pray for that person or do whatever. And on one level, on a body ministry level, that's not a bad thing. But actually, the way congregations are often structured is that the people that God has called, trained, and given experience to in ministry is not just the rank and file. And there's a place where you have to think, I need to pass this person on to someone who truly can minister into that person's life. You know, you can get involved in a situation because you think, I'm going to do good to this person. And 10 minutes in, you suddenly realize you're dealing with a demonic possession and you are way out of your depth. Now, you didn't mean harm. But it can unleash something spiritually which is going to cause real damage. It's not something you play with. You know, discernment, not being naive or gullible, or, you know, it's knowing we all want to be good, we all want to do good to people, but we find ourselves in complex situations sometimes, and by thinking that we're doing good, we can end up doing harm and cause pain. I guess it's a plea, really, through this, in terms of how we use our words. And I'm springing off a little bit of what Lenka was saying last week as well, you know. When we mean to do good, sometimes harm can come about. And from my own experience, it's a bitter experience, knowing when to act and when not to act. It's tough. It's really hard. You know, because our instincts, pastoral instincts in particular, run in and say, we can improve this, we can make it better. And suddenly we find that we're making a complete dog's dinner of it all. You know, it's more than that, always, in our spiritual walk and our spiritual path. And there's always these grey areas, that we operate and function in. But listening to the Lord, listening and discerning as to what is truly the way forward, and wanting to do the right thing and knowing how to do that right thing, so vital, so important in everything that we do. Amen.